Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. We are back. I've just come back from Sydney yesterday from the Unite round, and I'm joined tonight by Jack Toohill, first podcast of the season for Jack, who is, of course, the host of Front Page Football TV, our weekly streams that we do in the A-Leagues. Jack did the stream on Sunday with Matt Olsen of the Dub, but Jack, you were also at a few games for Unite round over the weekend as well. And that is what we're going to talk about to start off with. But first of all, before we talk about Unite round first and then talk about the football that happened at Unite round, how are you? And welcome back to the Front Page Football Podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm really, really happy to get the call up after, you know, a long spell, a couple of months between drinks. But yeah, always good to jump on with you, Christian, and talk football, I think, is the vibe.
Yeah. The rumors that you were campaigning for privately campaigning for a FPF podcast appearance.
You know, me and Topor Stanley still have the picket signs. He's claiming his ghost goal back in the 2007 A-League season. I'm still trying to get back on the podcast hot seat. So, you know, at least one of those causes actually got up, you know, so... Mm. Albeit much respect to Nikolai Topol-Stanley, one of the best to ever do it.
I just thought of like a, you know how like you say like got called up, so like there's a lot of national team selection jokes that can be made there. And I just thought Antonis was on last week and he hadn't been on for ages. I should have been like, yeah, Antonis finally made himself available for the podcast. kind of like an Alex Robinson joke. Anyway,
me, it's like I realized I had a grandfather who used to work for Front Page Football back in like the 20s. So I just naturalized myself.
that naturalized for a publication. However the fuck that works. if you've been listening to the FPF TV streams, you know, we're far more casual and laid back, of course, on there than what we are on the podcast. So yeah, this is going to be obviously much more serious chatter from me and Jack. I've shown that I'm more than capable of doing that for a prolonged period. Jack, I think he is capable, but it's been a while. So let's...
Up for the challenge.
Yeah. All right, let's do it. So Unite round. Obviously, as was the case last year, after Unite round, lots of debate, lots of discussion. Unite round, is it good? Is it bad? Should it stay? Should it go? And of course, we both had a taste of it. I was there for all the men's matches on the weekend. I believe, Jack, you went to some women's games as well. You went to a bit of both, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Friday night, I was at Allianz for all the men's action, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And then Saturday, I headed out to Jubilee Stadium in Kogra and took in the women's action for the day, which was also thoroughly enjoyed. I would say Jubilee won the Unite round because it had the $10 soft serve ice cream. So that's a big tick in my books.
Well, I had a burger from a food truck that was outside Sydney Football Stadium, or like Sydney or the SCG, you know, where they had the little section there. Only two food trucks was interesting. The burger was okay. So, yeah, no, you're probably winning in the food department there. So, yeah. Like I said, I was at all the men's games. And basically what we're going to discuss here, the Unite round, so this current deal that was 3 years, of course, the first year with the New South Wales government was the much maligned grand final. Of course, that year was the Mariners beating Melbourne City 6-1. Then we had last year, Unite round, the second year of that deal. And then we had the final year of the deal, the weekend just gone, Unite round, or the second edition of Unite round. So the question, basically, Jack, from here, there's been two groups that have been probably split from this. And there's probably more of a group in the negative or the no on this that's emerged. And that's that basically, no, Unite round should not continue. There's not enough interest in it. And the league is not ready for it. We saw a lot of this commentary actually during the games, and particularly the men's matches as well, about the crowds and, you know, MacArthur and Auckland playing in front of nobody, and, you know, Western and Perth playing in front of nobody, and all this sort of stuff, which is really similar last year, to be honest. And then the other side of it is the Yes Group, who are saying that, you know, Unite Round brings the football community together. It's kind of brings a bit of a unique element to the A-League. You don't see any other football league in the world do something like that. And really, all it needs is just a different location, maybe, or a different timing in the season. So I'm going to start off by asking you, where do you sit if you do have a side on this? And like, if no, if it should finish at the conclusion of this deal now, why? And if you think it should, you know, be sold again to other state governments, why?
Well, just to preface this, being that I'm back on the podcast, I'm going to try and be as impartial as possible to this problem and attack it more strategically. From a perspective as a fan, which I attended, so I didn't attend it as media. I wasn't in press conferences. I wasn't contributing to the media caucus that gathered in Sydney for this Festival of Football. I was in the stands with the common people, so to speak, and experiencing it firsthand through, you know, getting through the turnstiles and wearing the kits of my favorite football teams. And from a fan perspective, it was ultimately thoroughly enjoyable. I don't think I've seen as much quality football in the space of 48 to 72 hours live in my life. And, you know, I mean, I went to the Unite Round last year as well. And both of those events, in my point of view, were major successes in it does, like you said, bring the football community. There's people that are in a state that I've had, you know, in passing, you know, conversations with who I got to meet, and that was really, really pleasurable. From the pragmatist perspective, seeing the empty seats at Allianz for the majority of the matches, except for the Sydney Derby, of course, and you know, the whole drama with Leichhardt Oval suddenly becoming unavailable due to the safety and surface provided to the women's players, especially, and having to be an ad hoc solution at Jubilee. You know, there are some problems that need to be addressed. You said that, do I think that Unite Round should continue? I don't know if it's a should or shouldn't continue. I think it's about in the manner that it does continue or does not continue. The APL really needs to target where it places this event. And obviously, it needs to entice their targets into purchasing it, that being state governments investing into the event. So there are some thoughts I have about that. I've actually just, you know, almost put finish to an article about this entire subject. So, look, I think there's a lot to unpack from your night round, but certainly, you know, the behemoth that is the Sydney Football Stadium, you know, 40,000 seater stadium, it doesn't look good on TV. And to put it blankly, it is a little bit of an embarrassment to the A-League to see all those empty seats. You know, every other sport has gotten on. They've had their own sort of magic round, gather round style events that have really been successful with selling out those sized stadiums. I think that you know, the APL ought to look at other locations that do have a boutique football facility that will both look reasonable on TV and also create the atmosphere that everyone who went to the games on the weekend felt. That sense of community, you had opposing sets of fans and other people's actives. It was a whole lot of fun. And if you can condense that fun into a stadium half the size or even smaller, I think that it will be a much more successful event heading into the future.
Yeah, so we'll talk about possible solutions, etc., in soon. But just on this year's edition, I think so. The APL had a lot more time this year to plan Unite Rounds. I don't think anyone can deny that there was more planning in Unite Round this year. I think so. Something like now, I think. Now, I didn't attend any women's matches, but you did. I know Antonis did. He was down in Sydney with me too. We had Cody Ajayi from Front Page Football doing some commentary for the collective, which was really cool too. But from all accounts, The women's games, yeah, were great. Good football, and everyone kind of had a bit of a blast. So no issues there. I know a lot of people, of course, visited the ladies' league, which unbelievably I actually didn't have time to visit, and I wasn't able to. So
oh,
I have to be
shameful,
well,
shame, Chris.
Yeah, I know. So that'll have to be the next trip to Sydney for sure. No excuses there. But I think, as I said, the APL had more time to plan. But so something like, I think a lot of people, for example, with the Leichhardt situation and the pitch, like, so I've actually contacted Inner West Council to get an understanding of why their pitch wasn't ready when they basically had like 5 months knowing that Leichhardt Oval was going to host Unite Round matches. Have not received a response. Not really expecting to receive a response, but no issue with contacting them. So
I'm gonna head down to the office for you.
Yeah, you could for me. Yeah. You know, just putting a word. But like, I think anyone trying to like blame the APL for that situation, I think is a little bit far fetched. Yeah, you could say maybe like the week before in the Sydney Derby, the pitch looked bad. Maybe for a few weeks before that, they could have done an assessment and been like, okay, we've got to move this to Cogra now. But again, from all accounts, it doesn't seem like that affected anyone's experience too much. The only thing with that was, of course, Cogra is much further away from Moore Park than Leichhardt. But really, I think our focus here is more on the men's side because that's the big draw card when we're talking about from a commercial point of view with your night round. And I think fundamentally the crowds were awful. You know, there's no real beating around the bush with that. There are some mitigating factors to it. No one in Sydney is going to turn up to a Western United Perth game at 5:30 on a Friday. Jack, you work in Sydney, you live in Sydney. I mean, some people won't finish their working days till 6, let alone, you know, getting out to Moore Park, wherever they are, to actually attend a game on a Friday, and let alone when there's no New South Wales team involved in that. So, you know, bad scheduling of that has to be said. And the other thing was, yeah, you mentioned the football. To be fair, yeah, I would say 4 of the 6 games was good football. On Sunday, the games weren't good, but what was the difference between Sunday and the other days? Well, we started games at 1:30. And I think that's severely, I mean, both coaches, Giancarlo Italiano, Patrick Cazorbo, said after the game about the heat, you know, even Steve Corriger, even though MacArthur and Auckland started at 4 o'clock, Corriger kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, the heat basically made the Auckland players tire a little bit earlier in that game. So I think, again, those are a couple of scheduling issues that the APL can definitely look at and review. The other thing is, and, you know, I've got a Jets fan here with me. I don't understand why you'd put an F3 derby on your night round. Like, Jack, they would have got more if that was just a Newcastle home game. Would they not have?
Well,
like, I mean, you can speak more to this than me. It just feels like that's a bit of a waste of actually a decent crowd in Newcastle. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I'll speak to this. I think that in terms of the crowd, if you do look back on the last few F3 derbies, they're just because of the, I suppose, lack of support for the Newcastle Jets and also the Central Coast Mariners, you know, seemingly not being able to continue their support through the final series into the regular season. The derbies range between about 9,000 to 7,000 anyway, and according to Oz Stadiums, in the stadium at the time, there was about 6,900 people, right? So in terms of the all-in-all factors, taking in the context of the last couple of years, of course, it actually really didn't do that bad as a draw card. The problem was, of course, it was in that 45,000 seat of behemoth of Sydney Football Stadium. And, you know, 7,000 people might as well be 700 people in that stadium. Like, it really doesn't fill a lot up. And look, I don't want to say it was a wasted fixture. There was plenty of Newcastle fans and Central Coast Mariners fans in there. There was also some fans from the other games who came along and stood in support with those two fans. It was still, I thought, an entertaining game, nevertheless. But, yeah, you sort of, I think, you can only have really one big draw card. I think that we'll talk about the solutions in a second, like you said.
Yeah.
But I think that you have one sort of premium matchup, and of course in Sydney it's going to be the Sydney Derby, and the rest of the games should be regular season games. So you don't take away The authenticity and
That's what I'm getting
also
at.
the atmosphere from those huge games that other clubs do participate in outside of the major derbies.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's basically what I'm getting at. The other thing too, we should mention. So Jack attended as a fan. I obviously attended as media, so our experiences were a little bit different. Like basically for me, your night round's kind of cool because I get the opportunity to actually ask questions to all 12 A-League coaches, or 12 of the 13. Obviously not a really avid Ma this year because Melbourne City had the bye. But from a media perspective, that's really cool. You actually get to interact with almost every coach in the league and actually, get a good spot and watch over every team tactically, which is going to help me, later in the podcast when we talk about some of the teams.
And I just wanted to interject quickly. I think there is a big divide in opinion and feeling about the Unite Round to the people who did actually attend the Unite Round and those who watched at home on TV.
And just
And
saw
I'm
crowd.
not having a go at people because it's a cost of living crisis. We can't expect people to be as mobile as they might otherwise be and motivated to go to these sort of sporting events. But it needs to be said that there is a correlation to some of those groups.
Definitely, definitely. And the Saturday was awesome, for the most part. Particularly the good thing about it, kind of the Saturday double header for the men, it kind of had that feel of like if you had a normal like women's men's double header at any sort of A-League ground, because basically Adelaide Brisbane, or Brisbane Adelaide, because I think Brisbane were the home team, played. And then basically, the second half, you already had a bunch of Sydney FC and Wanderers fans turning up. So they were watching the second half of Brisbane Adelaide, and then they watched the derby. So the crowd for the second half of that game was actually pretty decent. So that's a benefit there. But solutions, I guess, is where we go to next. So it's also possible that, the next 15 minutes that me and Jack talk here could be completely null and void already. I mean, the APL might have made a decision already at the time that we're talking right now that they're just not going to pursue it anymore, and that'll be that. Because also cost too much. All the activations they had to set up and all this sort of stuff. Like, what's the point? Which is totally reasonable. A few solutions here. So, main solution, which a lot of people are talking about, is okay, why does it have to be Sydney? What about elsewhere? You've mentioned, well, we were talking off air, and you mentioned Adelaide. Adelaide's been mentioned to me. Obviously, I'm here. I think Adelaide would be an excellent destination for Unite Round. I think the one thing about Adelaide, which would be a little bit of a tricky factor, or definitely something the APL would need to help with, is transport. Because if you know about Adelaide, basically it ain't like Sydney with the train system and the light rail and all this sort of stuff. It's basically buses, and it's not the most regular buses. And so if we're talking about having men's games at Coopers, great, that's sorted. Basically, you're still going to get, even if it's 4,000, or 5,000, something like that, in the 16,000 Coopers, it's not too bad. You can deal with it a little bit.
And I think that the casual Adelaide spectator would be more representative than the casual Sydney spectator. I want to make that comment clear as well, because
Well, yeah, I'm going to get to that in a second. I think there's something here with Adelaide. The Adelaide sports culture, particularly at this time of the year, is a little bit more favorable to football. So AFL's not in the picture. Obviously, in South Australia, footy is the biggest sport, but cricket is probably actually the second biggest sport. So yeah, it is cricket season at the moment. We've got the, I think you probably know this, I think we've got the test match here coming up.
And the Sheffield Shield is currently underway as well,
Yeah,
I'm
the
pretty sure.
Sheffield Shield, although that's not really a big sort of draw card, but
No.
When the Australian cricket team play here at Adelaide Oval, that is a big thing here in Adelaide. But outside of that, at this time of the year, like there's no tennis or anything. Like it's basically, prime for football to thrive, essentially. And football is big in Adelaide. We've got a really strong football community. And as everyone would have seen, particularly like in 2016, when Adelaide United are playing well, the whole town gets around it. So it's definitely a kind of stealth destination for something like this that a lot of people might not think of. Yeah, the other one was Melbourne was mentioned. You could put the other thing, sorry, I just forgotten with Adelaide. Yeah, so men at Coopers you could do, and then you could put the women's at Jeb's Cross at Surface FM. Yep, that could work, but that's where I'm getting at with the public transport to Jeb's Cross is not great, and that's where the APL would probably need to, you know, figure out some solutions with that. I know they've been running shuttle buses, for example, between the grounds. I think they did that this year as well, between Kogarah and Moore Park. So yeah, that could work as well if it was to be in Adelaide. So that's one destination. Like I just said, Melbourne is another one. You've got, you know, you've got the home of the Matildas, which could be a women's venue. Melbourne Victory already playing the home games there. And then you've got Amy Park, would be, you know, a pretty decent venue for men's fixtures. But again, that is a 30,000 seat stadium, even if it is smaller than Sydney Football Stadium. So yeah, Melbourne's not the solution. Outside of that, I don't know if there's any other destinations that you think would be interesting. Obviously not Queensland. Absolutely not. So
yeah, no one's gone. No, I'm just kidding. Queensland, I don't think, has shown the appetite for football events, and
definitely
I think
don't
we're a little
deserve
bit
a ban like
biased against
that.
them. The only thing I'll say about Melbourne is that the home of the Matildas, also other candidates including Ironbark and Casey Fields, are fairly far away from the Melbourne CBD. And I know that it's more interconnected than Adelaide, the public transport system. From my investigations, which involves Google Maps and going transit.
My investigations made it sound like you were like doing some investigative journalistic reporting.
Absolutely not. Couldn't be me.
Well, we know.
It's a little bit far to travel. I feel like if you move it to Melbourne, you could position a Melbourne derby as a singular event at Amy Park, and you're going to make a much more successful event by enticing maybe South Melbourne to give use of Olympic Park Stadium, which would be an absolute coup for the APL. Let's just put it that way. And maybe having Preston.
Oh, are we sure SMFC Mike isn't like just protesting on the streets if that happens?
Look, I mean, if there is a guy at the picket sign outside the stadium, we probably know who he is. He'll dox himself if he does that. So, so, you know, you'd have to entice, I think, more suburban crowds in the inner city of Melbourne. I've also thrown Perth out there for the sheer fact that HBF Park is a decently sized stadium.
But travel is a big factor there.
Travel is another big factor out there. In terms of public transport, it would be a huge ask.
Oh, no, I just mean like, interstate
fans. East Coast
like,
as well.
Even for me, that's like a 3-hour flight.
Oh yeah, East Coast fans are be shamed. You know, you're being left home basically in that event. And yeah, I want to say public transport in Perth as well isn't also as interconnected as Sydney or Melbourne. So all of these sort of things, I have written an article which should come out in the next 24 to 48 hours about, and I have sort of unpacked all of these things. But there are solutions here, and there is a Sydney-based solution, if you don't mind me presenting as well.
Oh, sure.
Sydney has got a host of suburban grounds, right? And they're all relatively easily accessible from public transport. Right. We saw with Jubilee, it's only about a 10-minute walk from Carlton Station, which is on the Sydney train line. You've also got the likes of Belmore Oval, which is right next to Belmore Station on the Canterbury line. I know that's currently undergoing track works with the Metro as well, and it's only shuttle buses at the moment, but it's still connected in that way. So I feel like if the APL, and this, like you say, could be null and void, wants to continue with the Unite Round concept, which from a personal point of view, I hope they do, because I think it is a cool dynamic and it's a cool thing to have, is that maybe explore an option where the premium stadium is used for one premium game, right? And I know that sounds a little bit far-fetched, but hear me out. Let me unpack this. Where if it's in Melbourne, the Melbourne Derby is played at Amy, obviously, right? Or if it's in Sydney, the Sydney Derby is played in Sydney, right? That's not too far-fetched. And then what should be happening is you can either put it on a holiday weekend, right? So you've got, you know, the best part of 4 days to schedule your matches around, and then you can play other men's matches at suburban grounds. All right, I just said Belmore really interconnected. I mean, if Inner West Council can get their shit together, Leichhardt Oval would be an excellent candidate as well, and obviously Jubilee and Kogarah, they're all really interconnected. So you've also got to have the appetite for this sort of product, and given the results that Destination New South Wales has gotten, I don't think New South Wales will be interested in the Unite Round. We said this before, it was an ad hoc solution to a problem that really did just have the ugliness of Australian football emerge out of it. You know, let's just put it that way, and we won't unpack the rest of that. But, you know, I think that the APL would do well to try and explore continuing the night round. But if it doesn't happen, if it's not feasible, and it's a business decision that they have to make, then they have to make it, and fans can't be too disappointed.
Yeah, so a couple of things you mentioned when we talk about grounds. So something which has emerged out of this weekend, I feel, I'm not sure if it was the same in the women's games, but a lot of players slipping in the men's games on Allianz's on the turf because it was so overused over the weekend. Like basically by the time Sunday came, like I think Giancarlo Italiano mentioned it in his press conference. He said, like, yeah, like, must have been like about 10 players. He slipped out there, like, you know, falling over.
Well,
And
I think you
pitch
just brought up,
condition is something which is important here, too, because, you know, we, it's a, that's one of those, you know, subtopics of, I guess, soccer Twitter, I guess, you know, discussing pitch conditions. And, like, we talk about how important that is, you know, to the quality of football all the time. Yet, by putting like six games on one ground, and particularly, you know, two in a row each day for three straight days. Like by day three, that pitch is destroyed. Like, and I'm not gonna, destroyed is probably harsh. The pitch wasn't destroyed, but it was clearly patchy by Sunday, Sydney Football Stadium, and it clearly had an effect for me on the play. Now, the other thing you mentioned there is appetite, and so we've talked about location, but what about date and timing of your night round? What's your thoughts on this? Was mentioned to me. I've got to shout out Antonis for this. He's mentioned this. He's kind of in favor of this as a concept. I think Matt Vandenberg on Twitter might have mentioned this as well. But your night round one, what's your thoughts on that as a possible idea?
Look, I feel like they're presentable ideas. I've also seen people chuck around the thought of having, you know, what the NRL is going to venture down next year and having a separate magic round for the men's and women's games. I don't think it would work particularly for the A-League just because I think that the women's game and the men's game are very, a little bit more intrinsically connected. I mean, they've both had a long standing in the football community.
Slight counterpoint, if I could, is what if you did a women's unite round during the men's international break and a men's unite round during a women's international break?
I
So
mean, if you're
that.
looking at the current calendar and where the Unite round has happened for the men's and women's, that's entirely possible because technically the women's game isn't an international break as the Unite round was happening. So, yeah, I mean, it is entirely possible. I think the round one option, look, the only thing I sort of need to reconcile with is that the A-League season starts in October. And obviously, the football diaspora is a multi-sports following, you know, people. And there might be a little bit of people with a little bit of hangover from maybe traveling to an AFL or a NRL grand final or final series.
That's a great point.
So the pockets could be a little bit depleted. Again, we're looking at entirely hypotheticals to see a hypothetical Unite round that currently doesn't have any APL support. There's no indication that it will go ahead and how it could possibly go ahead. And it's an interesting conversation. I think the first thing the APL need to do is to do what they often has failed to do in the past, is be very consultative with the process. Consult with state governments and see what would we have to do to entice you to invest in this event, right? Pick out their key targets as they would do for, you know, key expansion markets. You know, where can this event be most realistically held,
You know,
and where could
where
it
are the
be?
growth corridors?
Yeah, well, I mean, again,
Oh,
like,
did you get the joke?
I did get the joke. And again, like, it looks to me like the Unite round will better be served in a emerging city in Australia or even a regional
Possibly.
centre. I mean, I'm going to chuck this out there, right? Newcastle is a small regional city with plenty of accommodation. There is a fully suited stadium there, and there's also number two sports ground or Maitland sports ground to host the women's, right? Again, like, I'm just throwing this
Isn't
hypothetical.
Maitland Sports Ground actually not ready at the moment to host Newcastle women's games?
It's the number two sports ground that's actually not available, but you
Sorry, the number
know,
two. Sorry, I'm getting my sports grounds mixed up.
what I'm saying is that I think that a lot of the reaction online is based on the event being held in Sydney and being held specifically at Allianz Stadium for the men. And that's the reaction I'm seeing. And I think that people should probably take a step back, and the APL should definitely be consultative in the process to go, hey, where could it possibly work? Where can it both look decent on TV and the event be just as prestigious as it being held in Sydney or just as accessible as it being held in Sydney? And there are several pretty good candidates in that discussion.
Well, yeah, regional is interesting just as a point because, you know, whenever A-League teams, like, okay, when we're talking about preseason friendlies and stuff, it's completely different, I understand. But, you know, and they're very small crowds, but there is clearly in regional areas, you know, some interest in football. But yeah, I think I'm not too sure if they would pursue that. But yeah, you know, it can definitely be thrown out there. One thing I want to mention with Adelaide, though, too, is if, let's say you were to do Unite Round in Adelaide, but separate the men's and women's comps, I think that's where you could actually strategically use multiple grounds even for one comp. So, for example, I wouldn't put like a Western United Perth at Cooper Stadium. I would actually put that at Chepps Cross at Surface FM because that's a 7,000 that holds 7,000, 1,000 seats. Yeah, you probably are going to get, you know, 1,000, you know, maybe 1,000 seated. You probably fill that up. And then, you know, people on the hill, people are behind the goals, like, and then it looks pretty good as a product. So there's that. And then obviously you could put like Saturday night original rivalry, Adelaide United, Melbourne Victory, that'll be packed. So, yeah, that's, I can speak a bit more to the Adelaide, you know, side of things. The other thing though is, yeah, as to kind of put a bow on this discussion, is there actually going to be interest from state governments? You know, I know, for example, here in Adelaide, there's been a real push. Someone like Peter Malinauskas has brought a lot of things to Adelaide. He hasn't brought a lot for football. And that's where, you know, a lot of the football community have been frustrated about that. So do the APL have enough to point to from this weekend? Can they basically say, hey, look at the Sydney Derby, look at what happened on Saturday? How awesome was this? You know, we can bring that to, or we can play, hey, Malinauskas, we can play a regional rivalry on a Saturday night like this at Coopers and, you know, have a bit of a football festival, essentially. I wasn't going to say festival of football. I changed it to football festival. In your state, for the weekend, like, is there actually going to be an appetite from state governments for this concept?
Yeah, I mean, again, like as we're saying, like it'd be a difficult sell. I think to put another bow on this, Unite Round cannot be described as an abject failure by the APL, for the specific reason that it is not a failure of concept and it's not a failure of investment. It is a strategic and creative solution to an extremely difficult problem at the time in Australian football. So before the people start typing on, Twitter, Blue Sky, Facebook, and coming at the APL's head saying the APL did it again. I mean, they haven't. They fixed the issue that was there in the first place. And I think that a lot of people would do well to give the APL their credit where credit's due, that their flip from, being a dulled down, trying to mold Australian football in the image of what the board sees fit. To being a more consultative body, to trying to gauge the fans' interest and to trying to provide that through its either its media exportation on YouTube and podcasts and such, or through an event like Unite Round, which was very fan-centric with, stalls all over the place with jerseys, all that sort of good stuff coming out of the stadiums. I think that people should definitely give the APL just a slight round of applause for being able to pivot. So crucially in Australian football's most difficult time, probably since the demise of the NSL. Let's be real.
I think that's a really excellent point. Like, actually looking at this from the perspective of, well, this came about because of the grand finals decision. So you have to look at
And
when
in
you're
the
looking
wake of an ugly riot at Melbourne Rectangular
at,
Stadium.
well, exactly, which we all know, like, you can, people in mainstream media can deny it all they want, but that was obviously linked to the grand finals decision. So, you know, basically we've gone from that to actually having a discussion about something which, well, let's put it this way. We went from the league being the fans having, well, the league and the fans being at each other's throats, you know, from the decision, more the fans towards the league, leading to a pitch invasion, right? We went from that to actually having a pretty good Saturday, at least, of your night round, where the atmosphere was good, the football was good. I mean, on Saturday, there was like 11 goals over the two games. For example, people from interstate got to experience the Sydney Derby for the first time. I know definitely a few people on Saturday who had attended a Sydney Derby for the first time and they couldn't believe it. Like, wow, the atmosphere, it's like Europe, all this sort of stuff. Like, yeah, you know, it's pretty spectacular to actually experience a Sydney Derby. So you're right, like, it's important with this to remember where it's come from. This wasn't something that the APL said, let's do this and copy the AFL, for example, with Gather Round. No, they just used that as a solution to a major problem. You're right, Jack. Really, really good point, actually. Okay. We're gonna take a break in a moment, but what do you think happens? What do you think happens? Do you think we are gonna see Unite Round next year?
I'd be hard pressed to make any solid predictions. What I will say is that, in lieu of what I've just said about the APL and then their more consultative action, I feel that the fans in any decision are going to be much more represented than in previous years with the APL dealing out deals with state governments. Let's put it that way. And I think that fans can sleep soundly, not knowing that the APL has maybe their best interests at the heart of their decisions at all times, but to knowing that the APL is certainly making a concerted effort to repair the relationship. And the Unite Round is symbolic of that.
Definitely. And last thing I'll mention on this is I mean, most of the football people that I saw there, in terms of whether that was like media or, you know, like your content creator type people, or like even the people like commentators, or even people like the guys from Suited and Booted TV, for example, like those people that I saw at Unite Round seemed to really enjoy themselves. So
And
at
they were
least.
extremely friendly as well when you came up and talked to them. They were just like very
Who's
sociable.
suited and booted?
Yeah, they came into the Jets Active and talked to everyone who
Oh,
wanted to
right.
talk to them. They were absolutely brilliant.
Right.
I
And
gotta give there the plaudits.
apparently, I got word from our boy Brock Pearson that we've got a Daniel Georgeski interview apparently dropping on Front Page Football socials. So stay
Wow.
tuned for that.
Damn.
Maybe our own edition of A-League's warm-up on FBF. There you go. But
I don't have
no.
eyebrows like Stoll.
But I think what we can say is if the APL did satisfy one stakeholder or consumer here, I think it was the real sort of rusted on football people who wanted to travel, did travel. I think in particular, all the ones based in Sydney already, I think they, for the most part, actually did enjoy themselves. So you got to give them, I guess, a tick for that, right? But Unite Round, yeah. It can also be used to attract in new fans that maybe what's the term I'm looking for?
Reinvent.
No,
No.
not reinvent.
Yeah.
Readvertise to maybe fans who left the game previously. Yeah, you know, all that sort of stuff. All right, Jack, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to then talk about what happened on the pitch at Unite Round in the A-League Men's. Okay, so Unite Round Part 2, football on the pitch. So, Jack, we were just talking. Jack saw about four of the games, men's games. I was, of course, at every single one. So we're gonna kind of give some takeaways from the weekend's action. So, Jack, why don't you start? You've got two or three? Two.
I got three,
You got
actually.
three. Okay.
I went to the maximum of the brief given to me. So I've got the keys now. My first takeaway, and this might seem awfully harsh, but the performances by Perth, including the performance you saw on Friday night, are so woeful at the moment that they are actually an indictment on the A-League and its quality. Like, it is getting to those sort of areas at the moment. And I'm willing to come out and say it because,
Jesus.
like, I know they went ahead early. But the state of the defensive line, you know, them bringing in Kanga, who by all means looks like a worse version of Darryl Lachman, that's the only way I can describe him, is just
Holy
not
hell.
working. And
Just shots coming from everywhere.
look, you know, I'm fond of Perth. It's actually a team that I actually look forward to watching in previous years, regardless of how the results are going. But this is like sort of turning me off. real, real quick.
You don't say the way you're
And
describing them.
it's just a like it's a disjointed mess. Like it's an absolute like just
Okay.
like disarray.
Yeah. All right. No, what was your all right, we'll start by talking about Perth. What were your other two takeaways?
My other two takeaways is one was for the Jets, so another Friday night kickoff. The Jets' youth and exuberance just aren't enough to keep them alive this season, and the new ownership bounce needs to hit quickly, and by quickly, I mean January.
Okay.
And my third take is about the Sydney Derby and the Western Sydney Wanderers. The Western Sydney Wanderers fans' apathy towards the club is transferring into their style of play and how the organization is handling themselves off the pitch as well, which I think is a bit of a concern, and it's emanated out of this Sydney derby that we took in at on Saturday night.
Yeah, okay. I have one about the Wanderers too. So yeah, we'll talk about them soon. Let's start. Yeah, let's talk a little bit more then about Perth. A couple of weeks ago, me and Jake spoke really in depth about Perth. That was after they had lost 5-0 to Melbourne City. Now, Perth. So, boy, wow. They are a mess in like it's actually to the point where I think if this is going to be David Zrilic is at the helm and we're backing David Zrilic, like this is going to take a full season. That's how far off it these guys are from where they need to be. There were multiple times on Friday against Western where Perth are, you can't fault them for effort and you can't fault them for. I know some Perth fans listening might go, "What the fuck are you talking about?" No, I'm telling you, like effort is a very different thing to outcome. So I think the Perth players are trying. I don't think that's the question here. I just think that A, there's a little bit of a lack of quality at the moment, and B, they're just not ready and they're not conditioned yet to play this style of play that David Zrilic wants to play. And that's actually why we're seeing Perth now in these last few weeks actually being more pragmatic. So they've, like against Western, they sat off more. And then when they tried to press, and the moments that they did, they were too slow, they were too late, they just got played off the park in the end. And Western played through their midfield so easily. So I was one of two journalists who were in David Zrilic and John Aloisi's presses afterwards. So I was able to kind of really ask quite a few questions to both of them. But we're mainly talking about Perth here. Quick note on Western, good performance from them. Only sour note being Dylan Leonard getting that red card. But Ibasuki and Botic working really well up front was a massive positive for Western United, and to score three goals too. People say Perth this, Perth that. Like that's a big win for Western United in the context of their season, something that they can really sort of build on for the coming weeks. But with Zrilic, yeah. So I asked him a few pointed questions. I think what concerned me a little bit here, great. The effort he said was good and stuff. I don't know. His assessment of the game was slightly concerning in the sense that he felt there weren't a lot of tactical issues in terms of, I think he felt that, at the end of the day, Perth took the lead. It was 1-0. And then as soon as they conceded one, they kind of capitulated. But I would argue that for most of that first half, particularly from the 20th minute onwards, which was really similar to the Melbourne City game, Perth were in that mode where they were clinging on. And it just feels like every week, it's like, when you're watching a team and it's like 10 minutes in, you're already thinking like, okay, when's the first goal going to come? Like these guys, it's like they're going to concede. Like you can feel it watching the game,
I want to say this. I did go very, very harsh on Perth, but I wanted to go harsh for the sheer fact that you said that they were desperate to hang on in that first half, all right? And the desperation isn't coming from, maybe an inexperienced coach, right? It's coming from not just lack of personnel and lack of, maybe some esteemed talent in that back line, but really, I'm at a loss the lack of structure. Like the back line at oftentimes is extremely staggered. The gaps are gaping, right? And Western United exposed those in the second half. And to credit Noah Bodic, he had an absolute like terror of a game down that sort of right hand side, and the combination with Hiroshi Ibusuki worked extremely well. So I don't want to take anything away from that, and especially considering what Noah Bottish has been through the last, I would say, 8 months ish. It's really good to see him back and having a good time like on the football pitch, right? But for me, all I saw was, either Kanga or Barr coming out of the line way too quickly and staggering with the way the fullbacks like Risden like sort of looked like, I know he's coming back from an injury, but he still looked out of shape as well. And then, the fullbacks trying to cover spaces where they ought not to be if they were playing a more structured style of football. And, there's really got to be some thought to put in. It's like, are we happy to they're trying to play a good style but losing 3-1, 4-1, 5-0 sometimes every week? Or should we be like a whole lot more conservative? And if we lose 1-0, it's not as bad of a look as what's currently being put out there. Like, it's starting
But
into those really.
I don't think they were gung ho at all, like against Western. I know maybe you're saying like should they just totally park the bus, like and just get into
Yeah, well, I mean,
like
just like.
total damage limitation mode. I get it, but I think so. It's really to mention this in the presser, but in preseason they were very gung ho. They were very like they beat Melbourne City 5-4 in the Australia Cup. We're going to score more goals than you essentially. That's our approach. Perth were actually very much like that last year under Alan Stadich. But I think in recent weeks he actually said he said I have to adapt, and I think they've tried to be more conservative in terms of waiting for pressing cues as opposed to launching a press onto another team and making it too easy to play through. But yet they're still too easy to play through. It's kind of like okay. Now we need to talk about like quality of player, the fact that Stan Lazaridis, whatever was promised to Perth fans with some of these signings clearly isn't coming to fruition. And it's a real issue. And, like Zrilic is still very optimistic, as you'd expect him to be. And he still very much sees it as a long term fix on a long-term project. But yeah, every time I basically asked him in the press like in my question I kind of said you and the club are going to cop more criticism over the next week, like this is how this kind of works, and what's the message essentially. And it's basically that we wanted things to start different, but we're going to have a lot of patience. And for me, I think this is going to be like Perth are not making the finals this year, the way things. Yeah, well, I know that sounds like, oh wow, Mr. Obvious, but like this doesn't even look like something where come round 15 they could be good. Like I actually think this could just be a write-off year in terms of not a write-off, a write-off in terms of results, more of a like let's literally just build some sort of foundation of style of play, understand which players you want to keep for next season onwards. Get rid of any that are not going to be like then Lazaridis is talking about January signings. Yeah, it's just a bit of a mess.
Look, I go a little bit panic stations when I talk about Perth, and I think this is one of the symptoms of their major problem. Adam Taggart isn't scoring. I mean, like, if Adam Taggart's not scoring
Well, they
a
can't get the
bag
ball
as
to
well,
him.
yeah, that's what I mean. That's precisely my point. Like Adam Taggart, if you put an under 11s team out there with Adam Taggart in A-League, he's bound to score at least five or six
All
goals,
right, that's a bit far-fetched.
Yeah, okay, maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but you know what I mean? Like, he's that lethal, and the fact that they can't get him any quality chances that are maybe like half looks that he can bag is just really, really concerning. And that's why I sort of went a little bit harsh on Perth. I really actually hope they turn it around, because I think that Zrilic, if it goes on for much longer, will become an unfortunate victim to what I think is more of an organizational problem with the new ownership
Well,
that have come in.
but I think he's last point on this because we got to get moving. But I think he is going to like slowly become a victim of fan like abuse and criticism when really like you've got a question, and this we've talked about this on the pod in recent weeks too. You've got a question why like this squad once again wasn't ready, like players are not fit. Like how can players not be fit? We have a 5-month pre-season, off season, whatever. So, Yeah, it's clearly a deep-rooted issue which goes beyond the manager. And Perth have Adelaide away this Friday. We're going to do predictions at the end, but yeah, that could be interesting. Let's see. Okay, your second point was on the Jets, and you mentioned how the Jets essentially they need more grown men in the room, don't they?
Absolutely. I think that the young talent that they are putting out there is promising, and they're showing shades of becoming, really good quality A-League players even more. Some of the ceilings are growing there. But your captain, is Costa Grozos, who's, is he 25 yet? I'm pretty sure he's only like 24, right? When that's your captain, and he's one of your most senior outfield players, it's a bit of a concern, and it was concerning heading into the season. And I hope that this is a message from Rob Stanton. He does open a lot of his press conferences before looking at the match in its sort of the primary view as going, we're a young team, and like that's evidently clear in the
So
way
did you
that they're capitulating
have you
results.
watched the press conference from Friday?
I haven't watched the press conference from
Okay.
Friday.
Would you like me to give you some quotes? So obviously I was in the presser. I asked Stanton a few questions. So man, really, really interesting press conference. It literally sounded like one of those presses, like, I'm not even sure. Like, are we sure Rob Stanton's gonna be in a job next week? Kind of that's what you're kind of feeling walking out of there. Just some of the things he was saying, but here's some quotes. He mentioned about, so we've heard Rob Stanton mention this for like ever since he's been in the job with Newcastle about moments in the game, not taking your moments, then moments go against you. It's actually a problem for a few teams, not just Newcastle. There's a few teams who are in this boat, but Newcastle, it hurts them more because they have good periods, I feel, in games, and they've definitely got some young talent, but Jack, you're right. They're just too young at the moment, but I was in the middle of asking him kind of about these moments, and he kind of goes, mate, it has kept me up for months because we had 10 draws last year. And if you convert those into wins or half of them, it's a different picture. But as a coach, you have to win games. And he always does this thing where he accepts pressure in a press conference and he accepts responsibility for defeat. So then he goes on and says, so the pressure's on me and I accept the pressure. I accept the defeat. So I'm suffering. How long I get? I don't know. Who knows? I'm worried about it, to be honest. It's what I like doing. So I'll do it as long as they tell me that you can't do it anymore. You got to go somewhere else.
Well,
And
can I make a
yeah,
quick caveat
yeah.
to that? Is that even last year, I remember attending the press conference when they did capitulate to Melbourne City at home, and that sort of talk where he does accept the pressure and does feel the full weight of losses and does turn a lot of the, I would say, like attention away from the players is really, really characteristic of Rob Stanton since he's been appointed the Newcastle head coach. So that's actually a really astute observation. To me, what's that saying is that he doesn't necessarily feel that he's getting it tactically wrong, and he's almost reaching for something that's missing. Like he's missing something, it's huge, and he can't quite figure it out, and it's frustrating him, to be quite honest with you. And you can see it in his press conference, how he has walking around at the moment.
I think sometimes as well, it's kind of a like he's almost he almost like he says what he's thinking in terms of like, this is the truth, this is where we're at, and this is also the realities of my job, and I'm happy to share that with you, as opposed to like some sort of internal discussions are happening behind the scenes, and he's letting that frustration come out in a press conference. Because usually, if you hear a coach talk like that, it usually ends in like within the next week he's gone. Like that's those quotes are very like, okay, we're having this press conference, you're getting sacked. Like that's kind of what it hurt. That's what it sounded like, you know?
It's I know how it sounds, and like to the some of the comments are quite concerning. I just wanted to also say that to say that it's not necessarily, emblematic of Rob Stanton now. He's often said things like that in a press conference and has said them repeatedly. So it's actually really hard to gauge whether he has the organization's backing or not at this current time. It's actually a little bit of a mystery.
And the thing here is he's clearly frustrated with the inexperience, because he also mentioned the presser. There was a separate question, and he pointed to Alexander Sushnyar, and he kind of said, we need more guys like him, essentially, in terms of like, and this is kind of weird because you think about it and you think, well, it's not like he's that great. And also, like, he's kind of a little bit of like one of those recycled A-League players. But I think what he's trying to say is, yeah, but our talent is actually in our young players. We don't actually need experienced talent. We just need experience. And we just need to surround the young guys with some experience so we can, like, literally in a game like that against the Mariners, we just, like, that was a classic Newcastle loss, you know? Took the lead, threw it away within 2 minutes, then threw it away again, and then that was it, you know? And you've basically gone, you know, Jack, as a fan, you're sitting there going, we just had this game, and with the space of 10 minutes, we had it and lost it, you know? It's just kind of like, what the hell? So I think for him, it's frustrating because these, and that's what I mentioned in the presser, like, it feels like that was a familiar story last year too, and it's kind of like, hey, when are the youngsters going to start learning these lessons? But, you know, for some of these guys, it is still year two of A-League football as well. So it takes time. It takes time, and that the experience can accelerate that process.
And just to also go to a little bit more football on the pitch, to some people might go, well, it's the defending champion Central Coast Mariners who just run a treble that they lost to try and contextualize in that way. Here's some key statistics. Ball possession, 57% the way of Newcastle, 43% the way of the Central Coast Mariners. Big chances, 3 to Newcastle, 2 to the Central Coast Mariners. Total shots, 11 to Newcastle, 14 to Central Coast Mariners. So what does that tell you? That tells you that the Jets had most of the ball possession and therefore most of the field possession. However, they weren't able to convert. And I dare say that those two big chances that weren't converted in the game were the ones by Dane Ingham, the headed opportunity and then also the volley, right? Mm. And it also says that even with the Jets being able to control the majority of the possession, their defensive structure is not keeping teams out of their own box, and they're still conceding chances with, you know, I know it's only 7%, but it's still a decent amount. I mean, if you look at the completed passes, the Jets had 563 to the Central Coast Mariners 425, you know, a difference of 120 odd, or 140 almost. So it is a big thing to look at and go, yeah, it's the Jets capitulating against, you know, a team that maybe is underperforming at the moment, but still the treble winning Mariners. And my point is that they're not the treble-winning Mariners. They're still the Mariners. Don't get me wrong. They're still the Mariners, right? And congratulations to the Mariners. That's their first win in a, you know, pretty decent amount of time in the league. And also, I think they haven't won in Asia either.
No, so, that's the first win in all comps this season. Yeah, yeah,
this season. So I have to give a congratulations to Mark Jackson. His persistence and being able to do it in a derby is actually probably huge for their confidence going into future rounds of the Asian competitions and domestic competitions. But what I mean to say is that the Jets controlled the majority of that game, right? And they still capitulated defensively and weren't able to take their chances. And like you said, it's a repeated story, right? And how do you not capitulate? You know, it's with match experience. It's with match minutes. That's easily accessible through the use of experienced players, which the Jets do not have at this present time. And in terms of taking your chances, I mean, when you've got a front line that has, you know, the average age of your, you know, NPL under 21's team, right? There's going to be some teething issues there. Another thing I wanted to add is that there's no way that Ben Gibson should be on the bench at this point. Like, he is one of the shining lights of this, you know, sort of faltering.
He was asked about him. He spoke very highly of him after the game, yeah.
He's an exceptional player. I mean, that little dink to set up Aquilina, I mean, it was probably just a little bit of a hair of being his own goal, but that was special. And he set up for Eli Adams' goals a few weeks ago in MacArthur were also extremely special. So I just wanted to give him his plaudits.
Yeah, and Thomas Aquilina did his best to produce Miss of the Century. But but put the bow on this with the Mariners just quickly. Yeah, that was their first win. Actually, it was even though Newcastle, I thought, were good value in the game, I actually thought there were elements of that were pretty good from the Mariners. I think...
oh, absolutely. I didn't want to take too much
of No. Of course. But they structurally, they changed some things. They played with 1-6 as opposed to 2. Harry Steele played a bit more advanced. So Jackson, he's... Like, this is what's good about him, right? And this is why the Mariners are still the Mariners, because he'll adapt and he'll go, listen, the system we played last year... And he kind of said afterwards, he said, Like this system that we played last year, we didn't need to change it. Like, we were steamrolling through the competition, but now he's realizing we don't have as much quality as last year. That's true. And we're going to have to change some things. I think the other thing he did, well, the reason he did this to play with basically one more attacking midfielder is because, I mean, that strike situation is dire at the moment. Like, yeah, they need to find goals either from everywhere or from one player. And right now, Edmondson and Kowal are not providing the answers. He said, he still, as Mark Jackson always does, he has faith in his players. He believes in them. But, he also said, there's no hiding from it. They haven't scored enough goals. So, yeah, there's an issue there. Who knows? Do they address it in January? Let's see. Maybe a certain Bruno Fornaroli could address that for him. Who
Well,
knows?
I also wanted to highlight the performance of McCowan. I think that with Harrison still playing a little bit further up, his work rate was really, really exposed. And I actually think that his work rate is one of his key assets to being successful in this league. So with Harry still just sort of being almost like an attacking pivot to the strikers, I mean, trying to get them in attacking positions, which again, like you said, it is a little bit dire. McCowan was able to move side to side. To cut off a lot of some of the transition play that the Jets are trying to get going. And largely, in most part, he was successful in doing that, apart from the obvious goal, which was a breakaway transition goal from the Jets.
The Wanderers were your third point. Now, just state your point again. I'll state my point on the Wanderers too. So, what was yours again?
Mine was about how the apathy that currently sort of is the mood around the fan base and the general, I'm gonna say general vibe, that's not very eloquent, is sort of
That works. It
seeping,
works.
it's sort of seeping into the pitch and also into the sort of sanctum of the organization. I mean, I assumed you attended that press conference and was a little bit cagey, to say the
Oh,
very least.
it was hilarious.
Yeah,
So,
so
well, I'll get to a funny anecdote from that. Well, you can go watch it online, but it was pretty funny in the moment. But so, honestly, my takeaway was actually a bit more positive about the Wanderers, in the sense that, and I know, and I know, like, people probably be like, what the hell? But I actually just don't think they're on Sydney FC's level, and I actually think pushing them the way they did in that game was like weirdly, like there was a lot of positives to take from it. Even, and I know, like, Western Sydney fan 101 listening to this right now is like, shut the fuck up. like we've lost two derbies in six games. But I'm just kind of looking at it like, man, Sydney FC are fucking loaded. Like the quality that these guys have is ridiculous. Like Wahim is coming off the bench. That guy's coming off the bench. He would be the best player on like seven teams in the A-League. You know what I mean? Like the Wanderers, so in attack, the Wanderers can probably compare, but there's nowhere else on the pitch that they compare can Sydney FC. And I just think Wanderers fans look at a derby and they just go, like, you have to win because it's a derby. Of course, totally understandable. But if you take the emotion out of it, you look at the teams and you look at what the Wanderers are capable of achieving versus what Sydney FC are capable of achieving. And we're talking about just two different teams in different conversations when we're talking about the table as well. Like Sydney FC are just a much better outfit. And my positive though was, we got 30 minutes into the game. I think Joe Lolley hadn't yet scored. So it was still nil all. And I actually felt, fuck, like the Wanderers actually kind of viable in this game. They're looking good in transition, defending okay. Sydney are still going to have their moments because, I mean, fuck me, look at their quality. I mean, Douglas Costa was taking the piss in that first half. Like, let's be honest, he was fantastic for Sydney FC, And then, okay, conceded a goal, really unlucky one, to be honest with you. Klamala block shot and it just perfectly falls to Lolley to tap it in. Then the Wanderers score a fantastic goal. Sapsford looks awesome this season. Milanovic, though, unbelievable ball. Like those two alone looking like a fantastic duo. Then you add in Borello to it. Like, it's a great attacking lineup that they've got. One all, awesome, no worries. Okay, then Stajic mentioned after the game he wasn't happy with the foul that was given that led to the Jordan Cornie Perkins header. Now, I haven't actually gone back and watched it yet, but I don't know if there's anything to that or he's just, sour grapes. But great ball in by Wahim, 2-1. Okay, maybe could defend the set piece better, but it is a fantastic ball. And then really bad challenge by Pantazopoulos. He's late, 3-1 penalty. At that point, I'm watching it thinking the game's over. And then, like the Wanderers, the next like 25 minutes, they were the better team. You know, like they were all over Sydney for a period there. And I was kind of like, holy shit, they can definitely draw this game. And the Klamala goal was not just big. And sorry, Jay, I know I'm talking for a while, but the Klamala goal wasn't just big to seal the result for Sydney, but it actually felt like they needed that goal. Otherwise, we played for another 10 minutes. The Wanderers might have equalized. Like, so I think in the moment, Wanderers fans are disappointed because, yeah, what the hell? We've lost two derbies. Hey, Alan Stadgett, you've lost two derbies already this season. That's not good enough. But we're talking about two different teams here, and I'm just looking at the performance and I'm thinking, well, it's not doom and gloom here. Like, there's a lot of positives that they can take into next week.
So I want to point out three things. I think you brought up some really, really good points. Waheem is an exceptional player, an absolutely exceptional talent, and Sydney FC's side is indeed stacked. The only caveat I'll say to that is that they've been beatable in the last 3 weeks. Macarthur and Auckland
That's
have
true. That
shown
is
that,
true.
and that is really frustrating from a Wanderers fan perspective that they can't. And I know they got close to them, right? But it was in the manner that they were defeated in terms of the goals, I think would be the most disappointing part. The second thing I mentioned, actually, I'll get to the apathetic part in the third. The second thing is that 25 minutes you mentioned when the Wanderers are on top, it actually directly coincides in when Wamata was put on the pitch. And that is a point of frustration, I think, definitely for his agent. But I think it
Also,
is.
Caden Foley's agent. Yep.
Yeah, also, yeah. He's got everyone on his books, that guy, right? Ben Cavallo. Cafala? Yeah, there we go. I said that real bad.
Falla.
Yes, my apologies.
That
As soon as he.
was cowardly of you, Jack.
Yes,
Cowardly.
absolutely. Drive by. But Wamata comes on, and that 25 minutes you mentioned where they got the Antonsson goal and they were automatically viable in that game was because Wamata came on, and I don't want to make it seem like, oh yeah, correlation is a mean causation. He was a consequential substitute. And when they
I
came
don't think it
on,
was just because of Mata. I
I'm
think
not saying
that's,
it's just because of Mata,
yeah.
but it matters that Mata was there. It does matter.
Of course. No, of course. I think he has to start next week.
Just to
No,
finish that point,
yeah.
the Western Sydney Wanderers as a team looked better with Mata on the pitch, and that is an important point to make, right? Especially considering the talk about his appearances or lack thereof, and minutes and Stajic saying, oh, he's not quite there, or whatever, right? And then his agent adding into the fire. It's important to contextualize that, right? And the third thing, and the apathy, and this is what you're going to get to in the press conference because it's an absolute delightful experience, I'm sure. But it's just this sort of feeling where when Mark Redam was under sort of a similar amount of pressure in terms of lack of results, it's like his defiance, right? His defiance that I'm doing anything wrong sort of thing galvanized the Western Sydney Wanderers support around him a bit, right? It was almost like they fed into this cult of personality, which was Marco Redan, right? And it was just like, even though times were pretty shit, right? And everyone looking on the other was sort of shit. Like the Western Sydney Wanderers fans were like, oh, I can see something here. There's something there, and they're sort of battling, and it was the batless sort of thing going on, and ultimately it failed, right? It's here is where like the Wanderers put in a lackluster display, and also to be fair, they did beat the Jets like 4-1 the previous week, yeah, previous week,
Yes.
right?
Well, before the international break.
Yeah. The boy international break, yeah, that's what I mean to say. And it looked like, oh yeah, the Wanderers are starting to turn on a little bit. So like, when he gets into a press conference and loss, there's like, I don't know if it's a Stagic thing, but there's nothing that you sort of go and is like, yeah, this guy, let's put our faith in this guy. Like he doesn't get this sort of support that and this sort of lenience that Marco Redan got. And I think it's because of the long-term lack of sustained success at that club, and it's starting to just seep into everything. I mean, it's sort of like we say banter era, like that's sort of like the football term
They're
for.
like, you know, they're actually they're like Man U. That's what
Yeah, that's what I
that's
mean. That's
absolutely what
what
they're
I'm trying to say.
like. You
We
know,
say
in
banter
terms of
era is
they
the
just
like the
think,
colloquial term for it,
yeah,
but
like
it's actually
now,
for what's happening at Man United right now. It's actually an awesome observation.
no,
And what was
yeah.
happening at Arsenal, like in sort of the latter Arsene Wenger years and into the next sort of
But
development
that was
managers they
different
had.
because they just kept the same coach. I'm saying it's similar where now I'm not gonna like we need to move on. So we're not gonna have a big broader discussion about Wanderers. But for another day, like there is that question there of they're just you're just changing the coach over and over again. Like, it's not really doing anything. But again, they've had like, I just don't think. So you mentioned like, oh, well, MacArthur and Auckland beat Sydney. Now, Auckland, like, I actually think they're probably on Sydney's level with the way things are looking at the moment. And MacArthur, I could also argue, only won that game because Sydney went down to 10. So that,
That's arguments to be made. That, and
yeah.
again,
If we're just kind of doing that sort of thing, which we won't really do,
I'm not
but
trying to minimize the Sydney performance either, because the football at times was just
oh,
like something.
yeah.
I'm like, seriously, like, it's some of the best football we've seen in an A-League pitch for the entirety, the ho entire history of the league.
When they've
When
got,
they are on.
yeah, a couple minutes here on Sydney. Like, when they've got Wahim, Caceres, and Senna in particular out there in that midfield three, like, it's actually like, try and get the ball off us. Try and get the ball off us, FC. Like, that's what it's
And
like.
it's not Graham Arnold trying to get the ball off a side to side, move it from one wing to the next wing, and then get across in the box sort of thing.
What's in the Arnie drive by?
Well, I'm not trying to drive by on his football, but like, Sydney FC have dominated possession in their history several amount of times in several different areas, in the Graham Arnold era in particular, and also the Corica era. And it's nothing like that. It's just like,
No.
hey, we're just going to pass around you. We'll pass through. We might even come back for seconds and then pass through again just to make sure that we did it, well and
The
truly deep.
mentality, yeah, the mentality is way more forward thinking under Wilfred.
Sometimes they're taking the piss, to be fucking honest. Like,
The mentality is really forward thinking in possession. It's also really forward thinking out of possession,
oh,
and
yeah.
probably sometimes too much with that, with the goal Wanderers scored. I took a screenshot. Sydney had eight players in the Wanderers in their attacking third with like 1 minute left in the half. So again, that's the kind of game management aspect which could hurt Sydney at some point, in like a big semi-final or something this season. So they do need to be careful with that. That's also one of the reasons, like, they get a lot of red cards because their centre backs are really aggressive and they're stepping up all the time. But I think I'd rather have that issue as like a Sydney than be like a Perth who are like slow all the time in their press, obviously. So nothing to worry about. And Douglas Costa, they planned to play 45 minutes. I thought he was great for 45 minutes. And
And
probably
as a 10, sorry, just quietly, as a 10, the way he moves from each side
he
of the
just
pitch,
roams. Like, they're just
yeah,
like, you just
it's,
go and do whatever the fuck you want, man.
yeah,
Like, go
and
for it.
it's, look, I mean, I don't want to also go back to the Wanderers too much, but if I was Stagic, that's what I'd be sending out Mata to do. If he only lasts 60 minutes, oh well, sub him, right? But like, he should be just telling these players who obviously have a quality to maintain an exceptional career in Europe and in international football, and just saying, you go out there and play, and what we'll do is we'll just have our little meetings off to the side. You have your own dressing room, and we'll just be in here.
Yeah. Oh, the last thing before I move on to the next team, that was, yeah, so the Stagic presser. So the question, so he was asked about when he got asked about Mata and basically Mata's minutes and why he was a sub again against Sydney. And he was asked by the reporter, why he was a sub, and he goes, "I don't understand the premise of the question."
Yeah.
What? Hang on a minute. I think it's a pretty basic premise.
How direct do you want me to be here? Why is he not on the starting 11, and why is he on the bench?
Would you like me to write it down for you? But like, that was funny. I think because he basically walked in that presser like knowing he was going to get asked about it, and he was like, "I'm going to eviscerate Fahid Ben Kalfala in this press conference." And it's almost like he was so angry about it that when he got asked about the question, he was like already mad and like, "What's the premise of the question?" It's like, no, calm down.
Bro was cutting a
Yeah,
promo.
he was trying to get bro was trying to get his little quote graphic
That's
on the A-League socials.
I'm sorry, sir. I was not aware of your game.
Yeah. All right. Two more takeaways. So from me. So I had the takeaway from the Wanderers that I don't think the Derby loss was as bad as people are making out. My other two takeaways are that Wellington's going to be a top four team this year, which I predicted in the over-unders. I think I said they were going to finish third. And that Adelaide are unserious, and it's actually ridiculous that they're the only undefeated team with Auckland. But I'm going to get to that in a second. So Wellington, Wellington are coached by an absolute genius. And I don't think, you know, I think people appreciated Giancarlo Italiano last season, but I don't think they're totally understanding the level of coaching that we're witnessing here. There's been a clip going around, I think, on social media, on Twitter today, about Giancarlo Italiano's answer to one of, that was actually my question, about Wellington changing during the game from a 5-3-2 to a 4-4-2 out of possession against Victory. So Victory were much better in the first half. They probably, yeah, on the balance of chances, they should have won. I don't think in the second half they were great. I think in the first half there were plenty of chances that, you know, Patrick Snorbo will have some sleepless nights about. But fundamentally with Wellington this year, they're going to be versatile. They're going to change system during games. And I think if you don't put them away when you're on top, Chiefy, he's going to have something up his sleeve to change it. And when he does, it's either going to make things harder for you going forward, or Wellington are going to start creating more. And I think if you compare Wellington in the second half to the first half, and I know Victory fans will look at it and say, excuse me, that, well, Wellington only had one shot on target, which was the goal, like, and Patrick Osorbo thought that they were the better team throughout. But I think there's a difference in the quality of chances from first to second half. And I think that difference came because Wellington changed their structure. And they also were able to... Costa Barbarousis, in particular, was really isolated in the first half. They were able to change some structural things to get him less involved in terms of build-up, less of him dropping deep and then having to drop deep, help break the press and then join attacks late, you know? So it was just a really shrewd tactical performance by Wellington. And I think there are some teams they're going to play where they're going to still play a little bit like they did last year, and they're going to be heavily transitional and really defend their penalty area with 10 players, you know, all that sort of thing. But I don't think Giancarlo Italiano, I still don't think this is the type of performance he wants every week. I think they're building towards being a bit more of a possession-based team. And the other thing for them was Marco Rojas, great work for the goal, great run. That's a massive plus for them. And Barbarousis, I mean, what more can you say about that guy? He's been unbelievable for 2 years now. And that finish outside the foot was fantastic. Just instinctive, inventive. And he is fantastic for Wellington, who, you know, made the changes when they needed to and got it done. And I think there's going to be a lot of games like that with them. And I think they're really reliable as a team.
Just about the Wellington Victory game, I will preface this that I did not watch the game in full. However, there's two things that I sort of took away from what I'm saying, the stat line. It's almost like Giancarlo Italiano has now two identities that he can tap into with this team. Like you said, in parts they're going to be transitional, and in parts they're going to be that awesome football. For the example would be that 3-0 win over Central Coast Mariners. That is just a joy to watch. And I think that's a huge asset for Wellington Phoenix, and their versatility is their strength. And that's really going to see them to a very successful season as it stands, unless the wheels fall off, unless they go through some sort of injury crisis or whatnot, that exposes one of their weaknesses, which I think is just, you know, if a few players go down, you know, where you're
looking, for sure,
sort of thing. So I will preface that. And also Costa Barbarousis, I mean, since he's been played as a centre forward, like, mwah, chef's kiss. Like, it's just like,
yeah,
he's reinvented himself, and I can't think of a better bloke to have being able to, you know, having all this success at big clubs like Victory and also Sydney FC as a winger, to be able to go, all right, I probably don't have the pace that I once had, probably don't have the physical gifts that I once have, but I'm still a smart, capable footballer. You know, and obviously Italiano's been a big part of his transition into a centre striking role. And, you know, those two minds together, you know, great things are starting to happen, and that's really good to see.
Yeah, and I don't have the running stats in front of me, but man, when you're there and you're watching from above and you can see everything happening on the pitch, Costa Barbarousis works his ass off for Wellington.
I don't mean to say that you know, he's lost his ability to run. I mean, just like, he's not quite as quick, obviously.
Oh, no, I wasn't alluding to that. I'm just saying, like, he's the work rate of this guy too. It's not just the goals. He it's massive. And yeah,
there's a fire that's been lit under him since he's left Sydney FC, and it's just so impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting victory as well. We saw Bruno Fornaroli late in this game. He almost scored the equaliser. Josh Oluwayemi, who we saw on FPF TV make a howler against Auckland, but since then he's been fantastic for Wellington.
Oh,
And
absolutely.
that was an awesome save of Fornaroli. Probably saw it late, and that really gave Wellington the 3 points in the end. Fornaroli, I thought, looked lively. I asked Patrick Osorbo about, you know, whether that could lead to some more minutes for Bruno. And well, let me actually get that quote up again, because I got it in front of me. But it was very strange. He said that, you know, I need to pick a team that I think is ready and available to win the game. And according to Patrick Snorba at the moment, a guy who was the second highest top scorer in the league last season is not, you know, fit and proper to win games for Melbourne Victory, particularly when they had, you know, a bucket load of really good chances in the first half that he probably would have taken. But anyway.
Also, I just want to say I might be selling my early purchase Virgos stock in that very first episode of FPF TV this season, because it's not looking good, bro.
Yeah. He had a good derby, and kind of since then it's been a bit, so that's kind of the sound effect for it. All right. Adelaide, I said Adelaide are unserious. I have no idea how that team is one of only two undefeated teams remaining.
But it's a hell of a lot of fun, you have to admit.
They are, no. So I need to be clear with this, because, you know, a lot of people, if anyone's listened to me for quite a while on this podcast, will find that I'm quite critical of Adelaide United. Now, I'm critical because I think, particularly with the squad they got this year, like, I actually think they can, and they actually have been, but my thing with them always is they've got a lot of technical players, and I think that they can always play better than what they do. But I think in the first four rounds, they played really well, and it was clear that they had changed system from last year. They'd gone to a 3-4-3. They're building up with a three in possession, and you're actually looking at going, holy shit, Carl Viet's doing something different, you know, system-wise, and wow, okay. Adelaide are a little bit different. They're a little bit more versatile. Okay, this is interesting. Awesome. Then we come to Saturday, and Carl Viet goes back to a 4-3-3 inexplicably and plays an old system that doesn't work for Adelaide. We found out last year because they kept conceding a whole bunch of goals from it. And what do you know? He plays it, and they're 2-1 down at halftime, and he changes it back to the original system that they're using this season in the second half, and Adelaide are the much better team. They dominate Brisbane and they win the game. Wow. Shocker. Like, so in other words, what I'm saying is maybe Adelaide in terms of the players aren't are serious, but if Colvert's going to be like this, where he's going to like go back to some old methods because, I don't know, he feels the need to change things up every now and then, like, that's going to affect the team. This is a team that needs a system. This is not a Wellington that can adapt and be versatile. Adelaide are very much a team that the players need to know their roles every week. And if they're put in positions to succeed, then they can be really good because they've got a lot of good quality in terms of technical quality. Put the players in the position to succeed and you'll get results. And I think that system in the first half, Clough was playing on the right, which makes no sense whatsoever, particularly when he likes to cut in on the right. If you're going to play him out wide, at least put him on the left, but don't put him out wide at all. Dylan Parias was suddenly, it was kind of like, hey, Dylan, you're not allowed to actually go forward anymore. When it's like, hang on a minute, Dylan Parias has been one of the best attacking fullbacks, the best attacking fullback in the league to start the season. They played with 1-6 instead of 2, which means they lost any sort of ability to build up and break a press. So there was all sorts of problems with that. And Carl Viet basically admitted, he essentially admitted afterwards that, yeah, like it didn't really work. He seemed to blame Luki Ivanovic for it and Luki Ivanovic's hold-up play as a reason it wasn't working. But I thought that was very far-fetched. And I'm not saying that Luki Ivanovic was great. I think you can point to it, but I think it's one of many reasons. And I think the main thing here is if you've got a system that works, just stick with it. You know, don't change it. Because there's plenty of teams in this league at the moment, Jack understands, with Newcastle, who probably are still struggling to find their right system. And for them, it makes sense to adapt and change and look for different solutions. For Adelaide, you started well, don't change it. That's my takeaway. And if they keep changing it like that, they're unserious and they are going to start losing games. So let's see.
I do I didn't see the first half, so I don't have a lot of thoughts on the second. But on the second half, the additions of Archie Goodwin and Ben Falamy were really, really strong off the bench, and the shape actually, like you said, interestingly changed. So it's almost like so Prius was deployed a little bit further up. Then you had friends Kitto and oh, I'm gonna butcher
Kikianis
the Kikianis. There we go.
in
I
the
was gonna
middle,
butcher
yeah.
it. That's what I was stressing about. I'm like, fuck, I have to say this name.
That's right.
And
You've said Pagonis often enough, so you got it.
thank you. And then it's almost like Mork dropped a little bit deeper, and then Barnett and Aligich went a little bit wider, right? And it was like sort of they were sitting in the spaces that Dylan Piraeus was no longer occupying, and then obviously Ben Flamey wasn't occupying when they were going forward, and then they sort of dropped in, and then they condensed, right? And that's sort of the shape, and it worked really, really well. I think Jovanovic, like you said, unfair scapegoat. I also want to point out that it looks bad because it's Brisbane. Right? It kind of looks bad because it's Brisbane, but it's also Brisbane scoring an absolute worldie and getting a penalty that was just a silly challenge in the box. So, like before, you know, Adelaide people might go, oh shit, Vaart's losing the plot again. Don't mess it up, right? Sort of thing going. I just want to preface that, like, that's the context. And, like, Brisbane Roar, as I'm looking at the stats right now, like, they only had two big chances, and it was those chances. They did concede 11 shots, Adelaide, which is a little bit concerning compared to last week, right? Sorry, the 2 weeks ago. But what I mean to say is that I don't th think that this Adelaide United performance was as bad as it maybe looks, right?
No, I'm not saying no. I'm not saying the performance was bad. What I'm saying is that going forward, they need to stop screwing around with like they can't screw around like that with systems. You have a system. We saw that. We've seen that in four rounds. We just saw it in the second half, which is what you're referring to, Jack. So
Well, I did too.
like
Statistically
just
as well,
stick with it and you're going to be
it's
fine.
so
That's
clear because in the first half it was equal on chances, one big chance each, right? Because you
It's
had
not
the
even that, but Adelaide didn't have control of the game. That was actually the
no.
first time this season where you could actually say for 45 minutes Adelaide didn't have control, you know?
And that was when they had, like, get this, right? And this is why it's an anomaly, and this is why I'm trying to point out it's an anomaly, right? First half, the big chances were even, 1-1, right? Yeah, and obviously, you know, Brisbane got a penalty, right? And that's the big chance is actually Jelicic, and the penalty is a penalty, right? And then
But
all
Adelaide
the
also, just quickly, Adelaide also only got their big chance because Billity made a massive mistake, which was obviously pounced on. And you could also say that.
That's another contextual point. What I mean to say is they had 63% of the possession, right? In that half, right? So you could say that, oh, they were more in control of the second half, where in comparison, they only had 59% of possession. Now it's 4%, and you can throw that
I
out of the
think it's
trash
about
can.
quality of possession, though, here too.
Yes, and that's what I was going to say is that they created six big chances. They had 12 total shots in that second half, which means that the formation that they then adjusted to is way better at getting the players where they need to be in order to put pressure on opposition defenses. And what you're saying is that Vaart will be wise to trust that system, even though it's unfamiliar to him.
You calling him Vart?
Yeah, Vaart. I don't do the VR. I do Vaart. It looks like Vaart.
I'm like, for a second, I'm like, is he trying to say Bart Vreens? I'm like, what's going on here?
I always have said Vaart. Like,
It's
I don't do the
Viet.
VR.
It's Viet.
I don't know. I've always said
But
Vaart.
surely you can say Viet.
I can say Vaart, but it's just not natural to me. It doesn't roll off the tongue. Like, I don't know. Like, it just, I've
It's
always
like,
called it
you're
Vaart.
that arrogant. You're like, I'm only going to say it if it rolls off my tongue. Sorry.
No, I'm just like not media trained. I don't know.
Media what? Yeah, no, I had to go through Star of Media training to know how to pronounce that. Anyway,
It doesn't look like the Vietetta ice cream name, so I can't say Viet, all right?
the speaking of Vart or Bart, Bart Vreens hasn't really convinced me yet in his first couple of games with Adelaide, so let's see if he can improve a little bit. I think he was kind of dubbed as a signing that could come in and really fix their defensive issues, but at the moment, like, they've just conceded two to Brisbane, so yeah,
I
not
kind of think
really.
he's been quietly good, so I'm going to go against you on that.
Okay, well, let's see how it shakes out. And Brisbane, I mean, yeah, it's just dire and really drab. And I mean, the fact that they had more control in that first half and they couldn't really put a side that's as fragile defensively as Adelaide have been kind of tells you all you really need to know about their quality. And there's a With Jay O'Shea, there's like a whiff of, like he might be getting old, you know? There's also a whiff of that. So I hope not. I hope not.
I think that with the Brisbane thing, right?
Yeah.
And as well, like again, I saw the second half, and given that they were 2-1, as soon as Adelaide changed that system, where it basically cancelled out Brisbane's ability to transition, because what it did is it gave Brisbane actually a lot more time on the ball in the centre circle than it did allowing him to get out quickly. They were shell shocked and they didn't know where to go from there, and that's a big symptom of, some of the problems that are occurring within that squad.
But that's why, and last thing on this, because we need to take a quick break before predictions. That's why Adelaide's system, that system that played in the second half, works much better for them in particular, is because when they rest defense, they've always got 3 and 2. So they've always got 3 centre backs and 2 sitting midfielders behind the ball at all times. So when they lose it, there's enough cover to stop counterattacks. And yeah, that was much better. I think, yeah, the first half, once they're playing with 4 and 1 6, the fullbacks start to get higher because they want to, because Carl encourages that. And then all of a sudden, you're left only resting with 3, 2 centre backs and 1 6. And it's just all sorts of problems in transition. Okay, let's take another quick break, put a bow on the football chat there. But we will do very, very quick, because the pod's getting long, very quick round 6 predictions when we come back. Okay, round 6 predictions starts on Friday night. Adelaide United at home to Perth Glory. Jack, start us
Look,
off. This is a really peculiar one, but anyway, just start us off.
I'm gonna go Adelaide 3-1. I think that Perth will score a goal, which is great, good for them. But yeah, I just can't see them if Viet plays that shape that we were
Well
talking
done.
about in the previous segment. I honestly don't see Perth being able to have the organisation to withstand it. And yeah, that's my opinion
Yeah,
on that one.
I had 3-1 as well. I know I was hinting at, some sort of shock result. Listen, 3-1 Adelaide, but let's look at the state of play here. Adelaide are one of only 2 undefeated teams with Auckland. I think if Auckland ended up as the only undefeated team, that would make a lot of sense. And Perth are obviously horribly overdue for something. So it would not shock me. This screams of a, like, I just said Adelaide are unserious, before in our last segment, and it wouldn't shock me if they drop points in this game. But anyway, 3-1 Adelaide as well. Auckland and your Newcastle Jets, Saturday afternoon in Auckland. What do you got?
I've got a 2-0 victory to Auckland there.
Oh my God, what the hell's going on? I've also got a 2-0 victory for Auckland.
We're just on a different
We're
channel
just
there.
vibing here.
Auckland, whilst they have been impressive, they haven't shown an ability to score bags of goals, so I think that'll save the Jets' blushes, but I don't think the Jets have the lineup in the organization to withstand the quality that Auckland have on the pitch, and I think it's going to be a pretty, substandard 2-0 victory for them at home.
Yeah, we didn't talk about MacArthur and Auckland in the previous segment, and we won't here, mainly because it was a pretty insignificant game in terms of actually being interesting. But mainly, yeah, Corrigan's mentioned, he mentioned, I asked him about on the ball, like basically being better, Auckland. And he said, like, 100%, that's an area that we need to be better at. So I think this is a game where it'll be interesting because I think they might have more of the ball. So can they force the issue a bit more against the team as opposed to being a bit more defensive? I think they're going to win 2-0.
And
And I
it'll
think, yeah.
also be like the beginning of the tough time in Auckland, which is going to be a lot of away games in Australia.
They're at home.
No. After this home game,
No,
like
so
for them.
after this one, they've got the derby at home, and then they go to Melbourne City away, and I think the travel will pick up a bit more. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean to say here.
Sorry. But yeah, for me, you look at this and you just think it's men against boys. Like, that's kind of the other thing with it.
Absolutely.
So yeah. The next game. So we've got 3 games on Saturday. We've actually only got 5 games this week in the round because 3 teams have a bye. Wellington, Sydney, and the Mariners also have a bye to help them with their Asian commitments. So City, Western Sydney Wanderers is the next game on Saturday. What do you got?
I've got a 2-2 draw. I
This is actually fucked. I had a 3-all draw. What is going
fuck. Oh, what is
on?
going on there? We are just like we are on the same page. We are on the front page. You could say yes. Front page football. But yeah, I've got a 2-2. I think that the City haven't shown really enough for me to think that they're out and out favourites, even at home for me. I think that Western Sydney Wanderers will take a lot of lessons from that derby loss, and I think that there will be some players starting who people have been clamouring for to start. Let's just put it that way.
I think my take with this was, so I said 3-all because I think the Wanderers can score goals. We're seeing that. And I think Melbourne City, they've won 3 of their 4 games, but it just doesn't feel like a team that's in the upper echelon here at
Very
the moment.
unconvincing.
Yeah, just some unconvincing wins. And I just think they're going to kind of be brought back down to reality. Also, they've had a week off. So, there's also that kind of getting back into it feeling as well. So 3-3 for me. Okay, Saturday night. I'm sorry, I have no idea why this game is prime time on a Saturday night, but MacArthur at home to Brisbane. I've gone 2-1 MacArthur.
I've got a.
Brisbane to start with 5 straight losses is what I'm saying then. You?
I've got a 1-0 victory to MacArthur.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be similarly. I think that MacArthur are going to use a blunt instrument. Brisbane Roar aren't going to know what to do with the possession that they leave them. And MacArthur are going to get on a break. And in transition, they're going to kill them. That's
Yeah.
just what I think is going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be a 3-0 killing. It's just going to be like a tidy 1-0.
This is a game like this is Brisbane are the exact type of opponent which MacArthur, like, they're just licking their lips. Like, this is awesome. Like, you guys are just going to have the ball and do fuck all with it. And we're just going to play on the counter. So, yeah, it's that's going to be 2-1 for me. And also, MacArthur lost against Auckland, which means they're going to win this week. They're like I've said last week, it's win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. That's MacArthur. All right. So, final game, which is on a, I believe this is, no, this is Sunday.
Yes,
Sunday, yeah, it is
four
Sunday.
o'clock, 4 p.m. Yeah,
Yes, Sunday,
well,
4
Eastern
p.m.
time.
Inexplicably at Amy Park and not Tarnit because apparently there's something where Western have to play against the other Melbourne teams at Amy Park still. Ridiculous. Anyway, but Western United, Melbourne victory. I think Melbourne victory will bounce back, and I think they'll win 2-0 against Western United. Jack?
I've got a 2-2, so that's where we
Hmm.
differ. I
Interesting.
think that. We're starting to see what a front line of Noah Bottic and Ibasuki can produce in that last game, and I think that it is dangerous. I also don't think have Western United don't have the quality to hold out a Melbourne victory, especially at Amy Park. And given that, victory are bouncing back from a loss, and Western United had the buoyancy of being able to defeat Perth Glory. I feel like it's a pretty measured like 2-2. I think that Western United will mainly play on the transition and Victory will just load up and they will definitely have a few goals against them.
Yeah, like I said before, like I think Victory's loss to Wellington told us more about Wellington than it did about Victory for me. So I think Victory will come into this with a bit of a chip on their shoulder. They'll bounce back. And I think Western as well, like this is weird, but Dylan Leonard is only 17, but I actually think he could be like a big miss in this game for them. Like he's been phenomenal defensively, that kid.
And he's
He's
yeah, he's
17 and he is a brick wall. So,
and built from his NPL Victoria performances as well,
yeah.
like really, really well fitted into the A League. And
Fantastic.
he
So, yeah.
deserves
All
credit for
right.
that.
So, we've basically gone with the same predictions except for that last one, which Jack said's a draw. I said victory, you're going to win. Let's hope both of us fare better than Matt Vandenberg did with his Unite round predictions.
Yeah. Like maybe he'll put it out his predictions and then for any of the Nostradamuses out there, we'll just go the exact opposite of whatever he says, and nab the entire round of results.
It's like that everything he touches turns to the opposite. That was Matt Vandenberg's Unite round predictions. Anyway, we're just having a laugh. Okay, Jack, any closing remarks before we wrap up?
No closing remarks. However, FPF TV is back on Saturday. It is going to be a double header. Very exciting. Two games for the price of one. The entry is free because, it's on Facebook and YouTube. I mean, I'm not going to charge you. But
Sorry, we don't
yeah,
make money here.
we're going to be taking on Auckland FC versus Newcastle Jets and also Melbourne City versus Western Sydney Wanderers. So join us on your Saturday afternoon, whatever you're doing. If you don't have time to watch the football, doing yard work, you're cleaning the gutters, you're washing the car, just chuck us on in the background over the aux cord. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Those feel like jobs that people would do on a Saturday morning, I reckon. But maybe, I don't know. Yeah, I'll be on the streams, and yeah, we're gonna get a live look at Newcastle fan Tui in the Auckland game. So I'm actually really looking forward to that.
I have to be unbiased in the podcast, but I'm pretty sure I'm allowed to be a little bit crazy Novocastrian Tui on FFTV.
No,
There might
yeah,
be a little bit of
you can.
leanings.
We got a taste of Matt Olson, Perth Glory fan a few weeks ago. So yeah. Maybe you'll just be randomly calling out players without any context midstream.
And for that, I do apologize in advance.
And for that, we do apologize in advance to Welasol.
He
Okay,
definitely
anyway.
plays like a Brazilian, I can tell you that.
Oh man, it's not looking good with that guy. Anyway, let's wrap up the pod. Thank you, Jack, for joining me on this Tuesday evening. I'm about to go watch the Mariners, hopefully get a result against Vissel Kobe. Let's see what they can do. And yeah, Unite Round. What do you reckon? What's gonna happen next year? We're gonna see it again, maybe not. If so, what should be done with it? What location? Let us know. And yeah, also let us know what you thought about some of our takes there about the Unite round on the pitch as well. Very, very interesting. Giancarlo Italiano is a beautiful man. That was not included in the takes, but yeah, brilliant, brilliant coach. Anyway, that will do for this episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. We'll be back next week reviewing round 6 of the A-League Men's. Until next time, it's bye for now.